Good morning, this is Dr. Dan Guerra, and you're listening to Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today is the second day of December 2022. Remember that we're doing sort of a hybrid lecture induction where I'm finishing membrane biochemistry as I'm introducing immunoepigenetics so that you see it as a continuum, which is basically what you find when you probe the literature. So let's hopefully demonstrate that to you. Now, we've been talking about the immune cell system, and I want you to recall about T regulatory cells. They're generated in the thymus, but they're also found in the periphery. So you have T-Tregs and you have P-Tregs, and there's a distinction how terminal differentiation occurs for those two subpopulations. So that has to do with thymic T cell development. This starts, of course, in that organ. Now, what happens there is you get a expression of a receptor for interleukin-2. And the receptor for IL-2 alpha chain is a protein in the membrane called CD25. And of course, there is the transcription factor, which is specific for Tregs, and that's FOXP3. So to obtain mature T cells to transform into Treg lineage, and so that occurs in the periphery, antigens have to be associated to cause that final differentiation. So the T-Tregs and P-Tregs are together the naturally occurring Treg population. And they all express FOXP3 as a transcription factor. And that FOXP3, as we mentioned just the last lecture, which was, I know, cut off at the end there, but I finished the discussion. I was just going to add an additional comment before the time ran out. That in order for the Treg to suppress T helper cell function, which means to be immunosuppressive, that transcription factor FOXP3 has to be expressed at high levels. So there is an epigenetic switch that occurs so that this phenotype is obtained. So there is something called the demethylated region. So that's short for Treg specific demethylated promoter region. Okay. And it's also known as CNS2 or simply as the TSDR. Now that's associated with the FOXP3 gene. Obviously, it's going to be somewhere in the promoter region. Now there's an epigenetic switch region that's selectively activated by DNA demethylation. And you find that in T-Tregs and in stabilized peripheral Treg populations. And basically that demethylation maintains high constitutive expression of the transcription factor FOXP3. And also, of course, the protein is translated out, right? So basically, that's an epigenetic regulation. You have to get DNA demethylation because there's a specific cis-acting element. Again, it's called the TSDR, the specific demethylated region. And it has to be demethylated by one of those enzymes that demethylate DNA in order for the FOXP3 to be expressed at highest levels. Okay? So this is unique only to FOXP3. And it's interesting because FOXP3 is that critical turning point between having a T cell that can potentially function as an effector cell or a T cell that is now recruited to function as an immunosuppressive T cell. Remember, that's what Tregs do. They suppress the immune response that's been amped up during a pro-inflammatory response. And it's been amped up because of the expression of pro-inflammatory cytokines in the T helper cell lines. Now, T helper cells, THs, also known as T effector cells, come also from that CD4 positive progenitor. Okay. So, in order for that to work, there are multiple signals that have to induce even the FOXP3. So you have to have the T cells induced by TGF-beta. So they have to actually be small I Tregs. Okay? So you have I Tregs that can then be converted to TTregs and PTregs. Understand? So that is a prolegomena efficiency that's necessary to be able to do the demethylation, which then allows for the transcription of FOXP3, which then in turn acts as a transcription factor to become a T regulatory cell. Okay. So you've got in the thymus, you've got CD4, CD8 double positive T cells. And in the thymus, they will react with a cortical epithelial cell that is going to have an MHC class 2 self-antigen presentation. You're also going to have a co-stimulatory signal associated with the interaction between the epithelial cell and the double positive thymic CD4 positive, CD8 positive T cells. So if you have high T cell receptor self-reactivity, okay, to those self-antigens in association with the co-stimulatory signal, those T cells will immediately be removed via apoptosis. But if you have only an intermediate T cell receptor self-reactivity, you require the TGF-beta signal so that you now generate CD4 positive, CD25 positive, FOXP3 negative T cells, still all occurring in the thymus. Now, with the co-stimulatory interleukin-2, interleukin-15 associated with those cells, you then transform or differentiate into CD4 positive, CD25 positive, FOXP3 positive T cells. And then the last step, that's the demethylation, that TSDR, you get a committed CD4 positive, 25 positive, FOXP3 fully functional T cell. And that's going to be a TTreg. Now, back at the thymus, going back to the thymus, you have that cortical epithelial cell presenting that MHC class 2 self-antigen to those double positive proto T cells. If you have a very low TCR self-reactivity, they're going to leave the thymus and go to the periphery. And when they go to the periphery, now you're only going to have expressed CD4. So these are going to be called in the periphery CD4 positive naive T cells. Now, inducing the T cell receptor via interleukin-2 and TGF-beta, you will now get a differentiation of those naive T cells in the periphery to CD4 positive, CD25 positive, FOXP3 positive T cells. And then you'll finish that peripheral Treg cell differentiation by TGF-beta induced and then demethylation associated differentiation to what's called an uncommitted CD4 positive, CD25 positive, FOXP3 positive T cell. Okay? So that's the distinction between the thymic differentiation after self-antigen exposure versus the peripheral T cell differentiation, which finishes outside of the thymus and is more reflective of interactions with cytokines that are generated from other T cells. Okay. But they have to encounter in the periphery, they have to encounter an antigen, a new antigen. Okay. So the TCR, the T cell receptor has to function. Again, not just a self antigen, but some other antigen has to be presented for that to occur. All right. Now, you also have lymphoid cells that can interconvert. I'm giving you all this background in the immune cell populations because you need this to be able for me to do this whole arc of lectures. So remember, the adaptive immune system arose probably relatively late in molecular evolution. And we're talking specifically in the jawed vertebrate mammalian line of B and T lymphocytes. And they are going to express, as you know, antigen-specific receptors. And these are going to come from recombination mechanisms within the genome of those two lymphocytic populations. So you have naive T and B cells. And they're going to be activating their cognate antigen in secondary lymphoid organs. And they're going to undergo a significant cell division and differentiation before they ever exert their effector function. Okay. Now, in contrast, there is an innate lymphocyte. And what the innate lymphocytes are capable of doing is a rapid effector function, despite any set of limited germline encoded reception. So these include things like natural killer cells. In fact, natural killer cells were the only ones known to be these unusual innate lymphocytes. And why are we calling them innate? Because they don't require any further differentiation. Right? They're going to immediately start functioning as an immune targeting disease cells. Right? So those are the NK cells. Now, since NK cells were discovered, many more innate lymphocytes were found. And so we have a whole name for that family. They are now known as innate lymphoid cells, or ILCs. Now, they're called lymphocytes because they have a lymphoid morphology, but they lack a rearranged via recombination or other mechanisms, I'm going to get to in a minute, antigen reception. But they are found at mucosal surfaces and, of course, also, as you might guess, in the enteric lamina propria. So the expression of lineage-specific transcription factors and discrete cytokine profiles then led to the identification of three distinct ILCs, innate lymphoid cells, okay? Those are subsets now. Now, they look a lot like T helper cell subsets, but they're not. So these ILCs are killer ILCs, right? They're killer cells. And so you're going to have the natural killer cells, which were first described several decades ago, then the helper-like ILCs. And those are going to include subclasses 1, 2, and 3. So group 1 ILCs are similar in their activity to Th1 cells, and those include natural killer cells and other interferon gamma-producing innate effectors. So ILC1s are shown to depend on TBX21, that's the TBET transcription factor, but also IL-7 and IL-15. Group 2, those are cytokines. Group 2 ILCs are similar to Th2 cells, and thus ILC2s utilize the ROR alpha transcription factor as well as the GATA3. Those two transcription factors they have in common with Th2 cells. They also are IL-7 dependent, and they will also produce IL-5 and IL-13. Okay? So I'm giving you this detail so that you understand that it's not simply you have B lymphocytes and T lymphocytes. And we've already talked about the innate immune cells and the degree of specificity they do function with, even though they're nothing like the degree of specificity that a card-carrying T helper cell will be able to mitigate. Now, I'm telling you this because think of all the different transcription factors I've just now introduced to you and all of the different cytokines that act as growth factors for the differentiation of all those subsets of those ILCs, those innate lymphoid cells, and how yet they mimic T helper cells in terms of their specificity in regulating the expression of specific cytokines that would function pro-inflammatory, for example. Okay? So you have then common helper-like innate lymphoid cells, right? And even within those subclasses, there's more subclass differentiation. And there's at least five different types, with natural killers being the major one. But these are all killer cells. Now, let me explain something else about how you're able to cause the specificity of lymphocytes. So they're more specific than innate immune cells in terms of mitigating a defense response against specific antigens, right? That's the point here. So there are two types of mechanisms for what's known as the recombinatorial adaptive immune system. Those are known as RAISs. And the two variations appear in terms of evolutionary characteristics, arose in vertebrates almost a half a billion years ago. So the jawed vertebrates diversify their repertoire of immunoglobulin domain-based T and B cell antigen receptors, of course, through that VDJ rearrangement of gene segments and followed by somatic hypermutation. That's classical discussion of how immunoglobulins and T cell receptors are formed so that you have a massive amount of diversity because of those recombinatorial mechanisms of those different segments, which make up either a T cell receptor or an immunoglobulin. Okay. Now, the AIS of jawless vertebrates, remember AIS is adaptive immune system, it has what's known as variable lymphocyte receptors, or VLRs, and they're also generated through recombination, but of leucine-rich repeat sequences. Okay, so those are scrambled to be able to generate a variation in those lymphocyte receptors. Those are in the jawless vertebrates. Now, the transposon-like recombination activation, which is uniquely associated with the origin of AIS in jawed vertebrates. Now, that's something that came subsequent in the evolutionary process. So whereas mutational activation-induced cytidine deaminase is a mechanism that is further elaborating this specificity, and it's found in the higher vertebrates, including the mammals. Okay. So you have a basic adaptive immune system design, which gives you the two interactive, which is the T and B lymphocytic arms that you get in both jawed and jawless vertebrates. And those are all arising from innate immunity. Now, this mutational activation induced cytidine deaminase functions this way. It's an essential regulator of B cell differentiation. So if you have the dinucleotide CG and you get an AID deamination, which is just passing water over that bond to remove the amino group from cytosine, what you'll generate is uracil. So now you have UG. So after DNA replication, so basically it's functioning by deaminating cytidine in the DNA, that, and it's coupled to the a repair process I've lectured on a while back, but basic scission repair, but also mismatch repair. And that functions directly as a mutator, you see. And it's, as it turns out, with this deaminase coupling, it's essential for the adaptive immunity class switch recombination and the somatic hypermutations that generate diverse high affinity immunoglobulin subtypes. Because you start off with a CG, you get the deamination to a UG, and then after that repair, you get an AT. Okay. So that same system is also active with epigenetic signature methylated cytidine when it's coupled with repair. And that will facilitate not only this hypermutation, right, but also it will remove the methylated DNA. Okay, so I'm going to check my time here. Now, these are all features which I want you to keep in mind, because these are the fundamentals of the basic immune response. These are the mechanisms. These are the biochemical mechanisms wherein you get the diversity of the lymphocytes. And I'm also giving you a background of how lymphocytes evolve from the precursor innate leukocytes, innate immune response leukocytes, moving from the jawless to the jawed vertebrates and all the way up to mammals and finally man. Right? And that deaminase is yet another feature which functions only on the B subset of lymphocytes. Right? And that's giving you again that somatic hypermutation, right, for immunoglobulin isotypes. Okay, so just want to make sure that was all clear. Now, here's a bit of a clinical feature. Alcohol abuse, really common worldwide, became even more critical in the last couple of years during the pandemic. So what does alcohol abuse involve? Well, it causes many things. Neurodegeneration is one that comes to mind, and also a complete destruction of metabolic regulation and a membrane effect, which is complete disorganization of membrane lipids. But there's an immunosuppressive result of alcohol abuse. It doesn't get that much attention, but it's a predisposing factor to opportunistic infection that you find in alcoholics, as well as a predisposing potential factor for cancers. So this involves all the clinical complications of alcohol abuse, because this is basically a discussion of immune dysfunction. So what are the mechanisms? You get defects in both the humoral and the cell-mediated immune response. So many of the immune cells are affected by alcohol, including neutrophils, natural killer cells, which I just described, and monocytes, macrophages. And the effects of alcohol also has been proven in thymus-derived thymocytes. And that actually results in a major factor contributing to overall immune suppression. So natural killer cells, many of the innate immune cells, and T lymphocytes are all negatively impacted by ethanol abuse. Okay. So what happens, the readout of that, is you, upon ethanol exposure, you get an alteration in the extent and pattern, that's quality and quantity, of T lymphocytic cytokine secretion and the T lymphocytic hyporesponsiveness that results in the alcohol abuse. Okay. So these are just some of the features that have been known. Now, the stimulation of a CD4 positive T cell initiates an intracellular signaling cascade that's going to involve, wait for it, membrane lipid rafts. That's correct, in the T cell. So the cascade is going to start, if you want to get a starting point here, with the T cell receptor. So once the T cell receptor is activated, you get interleukin-2 production. And those are the initial events, all of which are taking place in the plasma membrane microdomains, otherwise known as lipid rafts, in the T cell receptor region of the plasma membrane of those cells. So you get a clustering and a microaggregation of lipid rafts in and around the TCR-mediated signaling phenomena that provides the platform for the recruitment of all the other proteins necessary to carry out the functionality of signal transduction after T cell receptor activation. Okay. So in the lipid rafts, you have TCR ligation, and that results in the activation of the CERC family kinase, LCK. Now that's the lymphocyte-specific protein tyrosine kinase. That's what LCK is. That leads to, downstream, phosphorylation of the immunoreceptor-based tyrosine-activated domains. Those are known as ITAMs. Now, this is all on TCR-associated CD3 zeta chain. Okay? That's an adapter molecule that's required for co-activation of T-cell receptors. So all this phosphorylation, all that phosphorylation basically is initiated via the LCK phosphorylation. And that is going to play a central role in coordinating all the downstream molecular signaling. For what? For T-cell activation and specificity and function. So there's a protein called ZAP70, which is part of this whole membrane lipid raft consortium of T cell receptor interacting proteins. And ZAP70 will phosphorylate a linker for activated T cells, otherwise known as LAT. And that is an adapter protein, which will recruit, perhaps more familiar protein to you, phospholipase C gamma. So it's a phospholipase C. So you know what that's going to generate, right? And that's going to be occurring right on the membrane lipid raft backbone. Okay. So you know that phospholipase C is going to generate diacylglycerol, and diacylglycerol is in turn going to activate protein kinase. Right? So now you have phospholipase-mediated responses because of a phosphorylation of a protein ZAP70, which starts way back at the level of that LCK, lymphocyte-specific protein tyrosine kinase, being activated by the CERC family kinase, which was turned on by TCL activation. Okay? Now, we're not finished, okay? That's basically all prolegomena. Those are all proximal plasma membrane lipid raft associated signaling events, all occurring to initiate T cell receptor ligand binding, which will lead to the activation of all the distal signaling components. Ultimately, what? Transcription factors like NFAT, which is the nuclear factor for activated T cells, and ultimately then resulting in interleukin-2 gene expression, which is going to act as a growth factor for the T cell population. Okay? So hopefully now you're getting the whole story.